The court will take up is the Maldonado versus, excuse me, I apologize, the Hatcher versus Matthews matter.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is John Bosman for Mr. Hatcher.
Come on up, Mr. Bosman.
Good day, Your Honors.
So I was a little taken aback, Your Honors. I didn't see my case on the docket outside, so I thought that maybe the docket had been revised and I hadn't been told.
No, sir. You're still here.
Sure. So this is the first instance I've argued a case that's been unopposed in this matter. But I want to go straight to the remedy. What I am seeking by way of relief is because I think the decision was so fraught with legal and factual error that it's barely salvageable. And I am asking for Mr. Hatcher, on his behalf, that the court grant a mandate and remand it back to the trial judge with appropriate instructions to remediate the what I contend are obvious errors of law and fact. And or in the alternative, it's a close call, order a new trial. But I mean, it just can't stand in its present form because almost every error that could be made was made. There was testimony which was unrebutted by the appellant as to what his income was. It was inherently credible.
And the court found it not to be credible. Is that correct?
The court found it not to be credible.
And that determination rests with the trier of fact.
It normally does. But the exception to the rule is, as I've cited in the brief, is that when there's unrebutted testimony, which is not inherently incredible, the court cannot arbitrarily disregard it. And that's exactly what the court did here. And the court made no finding of fact from the record which would allow it to rebut that testimony. So the one thing the court can't do when there's unrebutted testimony, and there was no vocational expert, there were no prior orders in there that the court cited or relied upon or explained that it relied upon to determine Mr. Hatcher's income. So in those situations, the court is obligated to say Mr. Hatcher's testimony was his income is $2,800 a month. But
the determination of credibility does not always rely upon the evidence, the presentation of evidence to the contrary, does it? It relies simply upon believability at times.
Sure. Sometimes it relies upon believability, but the determination by the trier of fact can't be arbitrary or capricious. And Mr. Hatcher's contention here is that it was arbitrary and capricious because, I mean, we presented pay stubs as to what his income is. He put on his testimony. And it's not enough for the judge to say simply, I've judged by your body language, I don't believe you. There must be something more than that. There must be some challenge from the appellee. There must be something in the record that the court specifically takes judicial notice of. For example, the court hypothetically could have said, though there's been five prior modification hearings, and each time the evidence has been presented, your income has been $7,500 a month. And you haven't, you know, and I don't believe you because you haven't given me a credible explanation as to why it's less. But that's not what the trial judge did in this case.
Hadn't this judge in this court found previously that your client's testimony and presentation of his income had not been credible?
In this court, in the circuit court, no. Not from the court the appeal was taken.
But there was another court had taken that position in reference to income that was presented to this particular trial court. Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say that in 2009.
But isn't that something, counsel, that the trial court can take into consideration when weighing credibility? It's not just physically, we're looking at the physical way that they comport themselves, but that information also can be considered.
That information can be considered. And so if the court wishes to consider that income, it must say so.
Speaking in terms of credibility.
Yes. But if the facts presented at trial, there's evidence of the appellant's income. It was not inherently incredible, and it was unrebutted. So then if the court wishes to take into account a ruling on a motions day, on a motion from 9 years previously, the court is, I feel, the rules require and the Code of Virginia requires that the court explain that's the reason.
But what case law do you have to support the notion that a court must explain in detailed fashion why it does not find someone to be credible.
It's right in the statute, and not to, for the court not to do so is a denial of due is a denial of due process.
On the issue of credibility.
All right, I understand. I understand the question. So what case law do I have? I cited only the generalized rule that the court can't ignore otherwise evidence that's unrebutted and is not inherently incredible. And I don't see anything in the record of this case that the court did so.
Didn't Judge Irby, in an order dated October 10th of 2008, state that, quote, husband did not disclose income to the court on August 8th of 2008, and the following sanction is imposed, a judgment is awarded against husband in favor of wife in the sum of $3,500, payable in full within 120 days of this order?
That was Judge Bellows in the Fairfax Circuit Court in an earlier determination on a discovery motion, but yes. That was a discovery motion. It was a discovery sanction. It didn't go to the ultimate issue of fact of determination of his income at the time.
Can be factored into credibility. If there'd been a previous finding that he had withheld sources of income.
Yes. I think the court has the discretion to do that. But if they're going to do it, then they can't do it without citing the earlier finding and saying
Based on what law?
I have the case citation here, but it's...
I hope the citation's going to be to something that says in order to find someone to be incredible, the judge has to give a detailed explanation of why they find them to be incredible. Because I don't think that's the law of the Commonwealth of Virginia.
All right. I will concede that the court is not... If there's even a scintilla of evidence in the record for the court to find somebody's testimony not credible, the court could rely upon that without explaining it. I do so concede. However, this case has to be read in conjunction with the requirements of 20-108.1 and 20-108.2. So the court must, if the court is going to find that the evidence is insufficient to determine the appellant's income from the record presented, and that his evidence is inherently incredible or there's something in the prior record that renders it incredible, then before the court can deviate, they have to explain. And the court did not do that in this case.
I think your argument is under Schreider, the Schreider case, that says the court cannot arbitrarily disregard uncontradicted evidence that is not inherently incredible. And I don't know that you get over the hurdle by simply saying the court needed to draft articulable reasons for making the decision. But I think your argument is that the supporting documentary evidence of his income was not rebutted.
Yes.
So I don't know if that really answers Judge Atlee's question, which is a good one. Judge just simply didn't believe the man. But is the arbitrariness centered on the fact that other evidence in the case supported was consistent with his testimony?
Yes. Okay. And of course...
It was still disregarded. And then there are a lot of little legal issues in there, including, does that get you far enough to say... You still have to answer the question, was inherently incredible?
Is it
arbitrary to disregard it? Is it unrebutted?
It's arbitrary and it's unrebutted. I mean, look, if it simply was a question in this case that the only evidence of Mr. Hatcher's income was his verbal testimony that my income is $2,800 a month, then that's not an assignment of error. But he presented documentary evidence. If the court finds it... Which was unrebutted and is not inherently incredible.
Okay,
so
that leaves that question then.
So it leaves the
question, notwithstanding all of this evidence, is it inherently incredible? Inherently incredible evidence is a real tough one as to how you decide it's inherently incredible. But anyway, that's where I am. you're not the person who should be able to answer these questions, not here, but that's what your argument is, that there was other, it's in your brief anyway. There's
yes.
other evidence in support of his credibility, unrebutted, and it's not inherently incredible.
And if the court wishes, to raise his credibility into question and also challenge the sufficiency of the documentary evidence presented, then the court, I think, is obligated to explain why it was not otherwise credible, or why it was inherently incredible. In other words, Mr. Hatcher, I don't believe anything you say. I don't believe the document's real. But there's no evidence that the documents that
he doesn't have to believe that the document's fake. He can believe that what has been provided was limited, in fact, too limited.
Isn't
that what the judge said, that he believes that your client provided limited and less than credible documentation and evidence regarding his income?
That's what the court said. But the court doesn't have unbridled discretion here to just arbitrarily say, I don't think it's enough, and therefore I'm going to disregard it. The court, I think, if they feel, if it's unrebutted, and it was,
well, credibility essentially is solely within the province of the trier of fact, with certain exceptions. Isn't that right?
Yes. All right. I mean, that's what I'm asking the court to decide. They're really, other than the reference to the finding of a different court in a discovery motion, albeit in a child support action, a half a decade before, there has to be something more. I mean, the court needs to address the evidence presented in the court that's not, and say why it's inherently incredible. It doesn't have unbridled discretion. It has great latitude and great discretion, but it's not unbridled. And this reeks of arbitrariness. And I don't think it's enough to save the decision on this particular discrete issue for the court simply
to... We're talking about multiple decisions here.
We are.
The credibility decision is very distinct from what income figure was used by the court.
Yes. With respect to the other errors asserted, the record of the court is suffused with error. The trial judge simply did not do what they're mandated to do. No findings of fact about present income of the appellant, no explanation whatsoever in the record of why the trial court deviated from the guidelines, no explanation as to why the appellant wasn't given credit for the presence of his child with his current wife that he's living with, which is statutorily mandated, no explanation as to why the court imputed him $7,500 of income and then arbitrarily and capriciously used a higher figure, the $9,583 figure, in calculating the guideline child support, which figure we know the court used because the court took the worksheet and used the calculation from the worksheet and its findings of guidelines. And no explanation as to why the court didn't use the shared custody guidelines other than, I don't believe you. There's just no evidence to show that Mr. Hatcher wasn't exercising his visitation. None. All the rebuttable, all the things that the court is mandated to do if it's going to dispute the rebuttable presumption for guideline support, it didn't do. And the decision simply can't stand on that basis. I mean, this is what, it's almost as if the trial court was treating this as an entitlement to continue child support at a higher level than before, rather than a right of the child to receive the support at the presumptive guideline levels, and then justify in detail in writing specific findings of fact if it chooses not to do that. But the case cries out for a remand, and with the mandate to make the specified findings of fact and address the issues that are raised in the brief.
I was just about to ask you that. Is it sufficient for your purposes, your argument, that we simply find that was the error of law? It is an error of law, right? That she did not...
Yes.
The trial judge did not make the statutory findings of fact under these circumstances. That's the remedy you're asking.
That's the remedy I'm asking. I mean, this is a close call because I think there are so many multiple errors remanding it with a mandate just to say, explain the reason, the basis for the deviation is really an invitation to post hoc rationalization to just, you know, call through the record, which of which there's no transcript, and then come up with something. And, you know, this was done, of course, it was very tedious to put together the record and to have the judge sign the written findings of fact. Every step seemed like pulling teeth. But, you know, legally, unfortunately, I feel the more correct remedy is, in fact, to remand it with a mandate to correct the errors of law.
All right. Thank you, counsel.
Good day,
Your Honors. We'll come down and greet you.